Welcome to Not So Different, a podcast from the Center for Biosimilars. I'm your host, Assistant Editor Skylar Jeremias. Before the battle for market share gets started, the courtroom is the OK corral for biosimilar developers and reference product manufacturers who duke it out over patents to determine how soon biosimilars can enter the marketplace. We spoke with Alexandra Valenti, JD, and Rob Sierwinski, JD, Goodwin Partners and Senior Editors of the updated Guide to Biosimilars Litigation and Regulation in the U.S., about some of the key developments. So to start us off, in the updated guide, you describe a slowdown in biosimilars litigation. Can you explain this?
The first wave of very active biosimilar litigation was in part a function of the fact that there were a lot of products that became eligible for biosimilar filings all at once. And as we've worked through that pipeline, there was sort of a natural lull just in the number of reference products that were available for biosimilar referencing for applications. And so the lull in big part was because of the structure of biologics pipelines. I think there was some slowdown in terms of district court litigation as a result of some delays in timelines because the pandemic prevented clinical trials from being completed on pre-pandemic planned timelines. But it's unclear, the significance of that effect. We do know that there was some slowdown in the completion of clinical trials, but a lot of this is pipeline driven.
Add on the COVID-19 front, just for cases that were pending and have been pending at the time. Certainly, there was a period of time in the March-April timeframe where district courts were grappling with how to keep litigations on track despite the stay-at-home orders, but that's largely behind us. We've transitioned to a virtual world in many respects. Jury trials are still getting held up to a certain extent, but these cases don't tend to be tried to a jury. So in any event, there certainly was a little bit of a hiccup there, but it's largely behind us.
And can you also explain the changing role of the preliminary injunction in biosimilars litigation?
Sure. So what we've seen in recent years in these cases is the importance of the preliminary injunction in these BPCIA litigations. There's been a trend where the big battle happens at that preliminary stage, and then the case ends up getting resolved via settlement thereafter, depending on the outcome of the preliminary injunction. So that trend has continued in recent years. There were two big cases at the Federal Circuit last year deciding issues on a preliminary injunction. And I think that really comes from the place of the biosimilar manufacturers in this industry are showing an appetite for launching their products before the patent litigation is resolved. It's somewhat of a departure from what we saw in, I think, the small molecule space, where it was more frequent that litigation would be resolved before you saw a launch. So that's been an ongoing trend and one that we expect to continue, where the kind of big fight happens early and then the parties decide based on the outcome of that big fight to resolve the matter via settlement.
And this preliminary injunction is an attempt by the originator company to prevent any biosimilar marketing before the patent issues are resolved. Is that correct?
And we're seeing those preliminary injunction motions happen pretty soon after FDA approval of the biosimilar, which typically happens pretty soon after the district court litigation is initiated. So this proceeding often amounts to a mini trial. And is often the real determinant of and driver of settlements, right, that are ending these big biosimilar litigations early. I think that from a broad market perspective, biosimilar applicants are seeing the economic advantages of being on market first or early with respect to other biosimilar competitors. And brands are seeing that they need to really police with preliminary injunctions unplanned or early biosimilar entry and be quite aggressive with these preliminary injunctions.
Now, AbbVie is somewhat of a poster child for obstructing competition, adalimumab being the prime example. Can you discuss these key patent battles for our audience?
So I think one bit of litigation that that we've been tracking pretty closely is the antitrust battle over AbbVie's so-called patent thicket. And so far, courts have not seen fit to punish that patent thicket strategy with the label of unfair competition or as an antitrust violation. The decision in the lower courts that AbbVie prevailed in, right, in which it prevailed with its position that all it was really doing was just getting the patents that the patent system entitled it to get, and there's nothing wrong with that. It can't be an antitrust violation. They prevailed at the district court on that position, and it's now up on appeal. And I think that, you know, the interesting thing to note about that beyond the litigation itself is that patent thickets in general have generated a lot of discussion among legislators, both at the state and federal level, policymakers, and everyone scratching their heads wondering how best to address this issue of patent thicketing if it ends up not being an antitrust violation. And I think the sense is that there may be room, in fact, it may be necessary to find a legislative fix for this. And there's been a number of legislative initiatives that have been bandied about at the federal level. So far, none of them have really emerged, right, as something that's likely to get enacted soon. I think in part because government's been very distracted with the pandemic and other political issues. But now that we're coming to the end of all of those other priorities, we're watching to see whether these legislative initiatives actually get taken up again. And we see some proposals at the federal level to curtail patent thicketing.
In your update to the guide, you place specific emphasis on product liability issues surrounding biosimilars. Can you explain?
Sure. So there was a lot of litigation happened. There have been many cases going back many years brought against generic small molecule products with product liability claims. These are tort law actions claiming personal injury, generally, cases that you've seen, advertised on TV. There's a Supreme Court decision that held that generic manufacturers are immune from such claims in certain circumstances based on the way the federal regulatory scheme requires a generic manufacturer, for instance, to copy the label for the brand manufacturer. The regulatory structure for biosimilars is different. And so as a result, there are many open questions about the extent to which that same type of immunity may or may not apply to biosimilars. There hasn't been any litigation on this yet that we've seen. So it's a space that we've been watching very closely and expect to see litigation. But it is very much an area where there are just many open questions that we are anticipating will be litigated in the years to come.
And is this because biosimilars have minute differences from reference products? Is that correct?
Well, I think it's more that the way the law is written and the way the FDA regulatory system is structured is that there isn't a requirement for sameness. It's really sort of a based in where the law is. And so, on a case-by-case basis, a biosimilar might have a very similar or same label to the reference product sponsor. There might be differences. So to the extent that, for instance, a failure to warn claim is based on the label for a biologic product or a biosimilar product, because the regulatory scheme is different than the scheme that applies to small molecule products, we just don't know how the courts will grapple with that and whether there will be the same level of immunity or whether it will be different because of that different regulatory structure.
I think the one thing that's coloring the uncertainty in this space is the fact that the FDA's guidance is as to how much of the reference product label the biosimilar must copy are vague on that issue, right? There are comments in those guidances which suggest that if there is particular safety concerns with the biosimilar, right, that those should be included in the label. So, you know, these gray areas that will get worked out in time are, you know, another reason why we're watching the product liability space closely. Biologics in general attract a lot of product liability suits. So, you know, something that we have to watch for biosimilar applicants.
Well, Alexandra and Rob, thank you both for sharing your insights with us. And thank you to our listeners for tuning into this episode of Not So Different. You can find additional information in the show notes. And until next time, you can visit us at centerforbiosimilars.com.